Welcome to Pinpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. We have two topics today. Later on in the show, we're going to talk more about the efforts to save the USF Forest Preserve. We'll hear from a documentary filmmaker who has just created a film and is going to be premiering it tomorrow night. But first up, we're going to talk about this month's Pride events in St. Petersburg. And joining me here in the studio at WMNF is Nathan Brummer. He's the board president and executive director of St. Pete Pride. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Nathan.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you can make it. Well, so tell us what you can tell about why is there a festival in St. Petersburg that celebrates LGBTQ Pride?
Wow. Well, St. Pete Pride was actually formed 19 years ago. And there was a different moment. I'm born and raised in the Tampa Bay area. Been listening to you all since I was in high school. The political climate 19, 20 years ago was a little different, and it was a challenge to host Pride here in Tampa, and St. Pete decided, let's create our own LGBTQ festival, and so they did. And it has grown over time to Florida's largest Pride celebration. In 2019, we had over 265,000 people down on the waterfront in downtown St. Pete. And as all of us have been impacted by COVID the last 18-plus months, we didn't host Pride in 2020. And the challenge in meeting with the city was, how do we do that for such a large public celebration in 2021?
And one of the ways you're doing it, and we won't be able to talk about prices, is that you have to have limited attendance. So you have tickets for all the events throughout the month. So in general, without mentioning prices, what happens there?
Yeah, it's basically covering administrative costs, because when you have to count thousands of people, it apparently isn't very cheap. But we are going to have four festivals. We're spreading out over space and time. And so what we're doing is we're celebrating St. Pete Pride Fest all month long, thanks to our great partners over at Visit St. Pete Clearwater. And we have four different festivals with a different theme. Every week has a theme, and we're encouraging community organizations and businesses to host their own things. Facebook is alive with all these other things happening all over the place, and it's great. There must be something to do almost every day in June, which is amazing.
Last weekend, the weekend that just ended, was called Pride Outside and included a 5K run. This coming up weekend is Family Week. There are events on the waterfront at both the new St. Pete Pier and at North and South Straub Park. So what's going to happen there?
Yeah, at North and South Straub is where we'll be really anchored. We'll have the pier will stay open. There's a great park out there. There's children's space, and BSPC will put their big old speedboat out there, which is fun. But we'll have food vendors and exhibitors based on family focus, and entertainment for kids, young and old. And so that's going to be the focus, yeah.
Our guest is Nathan Brummer, the board president and executive director of St. Pete Pride. We're talking about St. Pete Pride Fest in the first few minutes of the show today. My name is Sean Canaan, and this is Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You might also be listening on the WMNF app, and we're streaming. Is that right, Blaney? We're streaming on Facebook Live at WMNF News if you want to watch us there. You mentioned a little bit about the history, and 19 years ago, so around the turn of the millennium, maybe a little bit after that, is when St. Pete Pride began, and you said it was because the atmosphere in Tampa was kind of hostile toward Pride events, and this might be a little bit before there were serious controversies in the mid aughts, I guess you would say, but walk us through a little bit of that history.
Yeah, I remember marching in downtown Tampa. You know, we had different city council. We had a fight. Equality Florida had started as an organization before that time and was fighting for our local human rights ordinance. We had one. We lost it. We had to fight to get it back. A lot of LGBTQ protections are really a patchwork. So as you go across the state, depending on where you are in the 67 counties, you may or may not have protections, and a lot of folks don't know that. And it was a tough time. I mean, we had Pride for a few more years, and then there was a gap, and I can't remember exactly the number of years before the current Tampa Pride Board pulled together and celebrated Pride and just had their weekend a couple weeks before our first, and then in between that, Gulfport Pride happened for the first time. So there's Pride all over the Tampa Bay area right now, which is great. But it's part of our history. I mean, when we talk about centering where Pride came from beyond the celebration, it is in the protests and in the history of Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson and many, many before the Stonewall Uprising, the cafeteria riots, and many more. black and brown and trans voices that were fighting for equality, and we are still fighting for equality. So these themes I mentioned to you are a little bit about telling the stories beyond the parades and parties, which we as a board and as an organization are very committed to.
Our guest is Nathan Brummer with St. Pete Pride. It's going on all month, especially on the weekends here in the St. Petersburg area. And you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. Why don't you talk about the other two weekends that we haven't talked about? There's Arts and Music Week, and then there's Taste of Pride Fest Week.
Right. So, yep, we have Family Week this week, sponsored by DoorDash. Next week is Arts and Culture, and that's Q-U-L-T-U-R-E, Arts and Culture. Little nod there. We're going to be at the Factory St. Pete, which is this great new mixed-use space in the Warehouse Arts District. And that is June 19th, brought to us by AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And we're going to be really focusing and elevating Black queer voices at that event. We have some amazing music, 4 to 10, later in the day. And then the final Saturday is our traditional parade day. That week, we're having the Pride Picnic and fireworks. So also later in the day, starts at 2, ends at 9. Fireworks, thankfully, will end with a bang and a lot of color, which is nice. And that weekend is brought to us by Trueleaf, thankfully, and should be pretty hot. Now, all of them are limited, so we get to the limit. You know, we're sold, and we got to close the gates, but people can pre-purchase, and they can also get tickets at the door. We are doing that until we sell out.
And the picnic and fireworks, that's also at North and South Straw Park on the waterfront in downtown St. Petersburg.
Yep.
And that's where you mentioned that 2 years ago you had 265,000 people at what's the maximum for this year's?
Yeah, 10,000.
Okay, yeah, so it's going to be a different type of atmosphere, but hopefully next year we'll have another 250,000 people back on the waterfront perhaps.
Yeah, I think we were projected to have 300,000 in 2020. So the parade comes back. We love this expanded format. The feedback's been great. And we'll take a break in July and start building it back in August.
And now the history of moving it to the St. Pete waterfront, it had been in the Edge District along Central and around, I don't know, maybe 25th or so.
Yes.
Right around there. And that was very popular.
Actually the Grand Central District.
Okay,
Yep.
Thank you for correcting me. Yeah, the Grand Central District in St. Petersburg, just west of downtown, a very popular time, a very popular place to have the parade, but then it was moved to the waterfront. What was behind that move?
Yeah, a couple of things. We grew to 100,000 people in 10 years. We grew to 200,000 in like 5 years. And the timing of this really came about following the Pulse tragedy. We had a real serious conversation with the city and with St. Pete PD. I was not on the board when the decision was made, but I came on right after, but was a part of reviewing those decisions, the security decisions and the growth. That many people in that small a space just presented a bit of a challenge. And so the recommendation at that time was to bring the parade, which is the larger of the two components. We really have a full week of festivities. 200,000 plus come down to the parade, and then the festival on Sunday in Grand Central, which has still been the plan, is upwards of 60,000-65,000, which both of those events through the pandemic at this moment would not be something that we would want to encourage, and so that's the reason that we've gone to these smaller events all month. But
and how has it worked out moving toward the waterfront?
Yeah, it's interesting. The themes are generating new partnerships, and I love collaborating with other nonprofit organizations to look at doing things differently. And I think there's great room for expanding programming, which is great. I mean, adversity is the mother of invention, right? Like, I've seen some great things come out of this. We have a great partnership with the Shine Mural Fest. Once upon a shine, there's this like scavenger hunt thing that we're doing. It's amazing. You can sign up a team and do that the third week in June. It's good, though. Like, beyond the parade, what do you do as an organization? I think other prides have struggled across the country to get beyond the regular format, but our community is so vibrant in all of these different areas that it kind of made it an easy decision. We've got a lot of, and on both sides of the Bay, arts and culture, our families, what we can do outside living in the Tampa Bay area almost every day of the year, we're kind of lucky, so we got to celebrate that, too.
Our guest is Nathan Brummer. He's the board president and executive director of St. Pete Pride, and you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:16 in the afternoon. You're listening on 88.5 FM. Maybe you're listening online at WMNF.org or on the WMNF smartphone app. You may be watching this on Facebook Live at WMNF News. And thanks to Blanny for filming it for us. And so you mentioned that the, you know, since there has been almost a year hiatus since the last Pride didn't happen last year, this year it's radically different. Has not having a Pride celebration last year affected the morale or the activism of LGBTQ activists?
You know, that's a big question to answer for a whole community. I'll just answer it individually. Keep it local. I definitely felt not having a Pride for 2 years, right? We had some smaller events. We had a virtual event we hosted with the Tampa Bay International Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, the first ever, our inaugural Tampa Bay Transgender Film Festival. That was in November around Trans Day of Visibility, and it was clear folks were hungry for community. Often being in affirming spaces is life-saving, frankly, for a lot of LGBTQ plus folks. And so we missed each other. We missed hugs. We missed community. And so the energy is pretty great as things have opened up and businesses have opened up for folks to come out and celebrate. We need it. I don't think it stopped the activism. I mean, I'm in a separate role, not wearing this 501c3 hat. I do a lot of community activism, and we needed to be pretty active this year. Our state has put us through the ringer, and we have had advocates from all over the state in Tallahassee. I've been up there, and we've been fighting against a whole lot of anti-LGBTQ and anti-trans legislation. And I would say collectively, we're probably tighter than ever on that. But now it's time. This is our month. June is Pride Month, and we need to celebrate our community and its resiliency and the work yet we've got to fight for moving forward.
Well, since you talk about what you're fighting for and what's been happening in Tallahassee, that does lead me to my next question. On the first 2 days of Pride Month, big things happened in the state government. On June 1st, Governor Ron DeSantis signed a law that stopped trans girls from participating in girls' sports teams. And well, let's talk about that before we move on to what happened the following day. So I'm sure your organizations have been fighting that. And what kind of blow was it when that actually was signed? Yeah. And why is that important?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I heard the news. It was about 15, 20 minutes before I was on my way to our flag raising with the city, with the mayor and other electeds at City Hall in St. Pete when that news came out. And yeah, I mean it's a gut punch, but as quick as you felt it, we have to turn it into the energy that keeps the work going, because it's without question there was intentionality in making that announcement, as minimizing as I think Republicans tried to make it sound like it was just another day. It is not just another day to the LGBTQ community, and that intentionality will be remembered. And our leaders are elected to lead all of us, regardless of party. And that needs to be remembered. And I know what the second one is we're going to talk about was, as we look at the 5-year mark for the Pulse tragedy and what that funding was going for, also intentional. And I will say again, our leaders, regardless of party, are elected to be here for all Floridians. And that has clearly not happened this year.
So the second one that we were going to talk about is on June 2nd, the governor made precision cuts to the budget, and a lot of that funding was to LGBTQ programs, including, as you were alluding to, mental health counseling for Pulse survivors was cut by Governor Ron DeSantis out of the Florida budget that was passed by the Republican majority in the legislature. And you think that that's not a good move?
No, he made a commitment. He walked, I ran an LGBTQ youth center for a while, and I know some of the programs that were hurt by that, the Zebra Coalition, the center over in Orlando, both of those organizations. Governor made a commitment when walking the hallowed grounds over at Pulse to take care of the community and those family members, and he has not followed through with that. And I think that just sort of speaks for itself.
If you don't mind, let's backtrack a little bit and talk more about the Florida law that bans trans girls from playing girls' sports teams. So most of our audience is familiar with this bill, but for the people who might not be familiar, what will the law do for trans girls, and why do you think it was so important that the Republicans thought it was so important to pass this bill?
Well, it doesn't what it will do for any trans athlete, but trans girls in specific, but I think trans or non-binary youth who are interested in competing or participating in sports, it shuts the door on them because it clearly says, you're not welcome, you don't belong, and here are some extra steps. It's an exclusionary piece of legislation. So any time in our country's history you've looked to exclude people, you have to ask deeper questions about why we're doing that. And it has never led to any kind of an answer that's good or humane or compassionate, and this one is not by any stretch. It was housed in an idea that it was around equality or fairness, but in talking with Republican representatives, which I did as a community advocate, it frankly came about following the presidential executive order, putting some things back in place that the prior administration had taken back after the Obama administration had put in protections at the Department of Ed and other federal agencies. And so it was a strategic political move, frankly. There was no problem. We have had great success through our Florida High School Athletic Association to have trans athletes competing. And it was a whole lot of time and energy wasted. And frankly, the debate on the House floor and on the Senate floor and in the committees to listen to the conversations and how they were framed was just abhorrent. I was there for some of that, and it was some of the it was just some of the most amazing things I never thought I'd hear discussed in state government.
So will this law solve any problems that were previously existing in Florida?
No, it doesn't. It won't solve any problems. There weren't any problems. As advocates, we're going to have to double down and doing the education so folks understand who trans Americans, who transgender Floridians are. I am an out trans man leading this organization. I grew up in this state. I was a public school teacher in this state. I'm educated in this state. You know, our kids are just trying to have happy, full, healthy lives, and we want them all to grow to adulthood to be whatever their best version of themselves are. Anything that gets in the way of that is unfortunate, and I think we've got to get back to the roots of our humanity. The divisiveness through this session was, it was some of the worst I think I've seen in the political history here in the state, frankly. But we will continue, and our kids are resilient, our community is resilient, and keep working.
Well, moving away from the divisiveness and toward being resilient and toward being having people together, this month is St. Pete Pride.
It is.
If people want to find out more about the schedule or the events, where can they go?
stpetepride.org.
Well, Nathan, thanks so much for coming on WMNF and being my first live guest in the studio in 15 months.
So
it's great to have live guests back in the studio. I really appreciate you coming on.
It's been an honor and a pleasure. And please, happy Pride. And whether you make it out to events or not, don't forget to celebrate your Pride every day.
All right. Thank you, Nathan. Nathan Brummer is the board president and executive director of St. Pete Pride. And coming up after this short music break, you may have heard about a student-led effort to save the USF Forest Preserve. We're going to speak to a filmmaker who is premiering his documentary about the efforts of biologists and others to keep the university from developing this ecologically important tract of land. We'll be right back. Stay with us on WMNF Tampa. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM on WMNF.org and on the WMNF. And the WMNF app, that is. I'm Sean Canaan. We were just listening to The Ocean Blue. That's Between Something and Nothing. Well, joining us next is Luke Myers. He's a student and a student at USF and a filmmaker. His documentary is called Choke Point, and we're going to talk about that and how the student-led effort is going to save the USF Forest Preserve. So welcome to WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Luke.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you came in. So about a week or two ago, I got an email from Luke, and he said, hey, do we have permission to use this footage from WMNF in my documentary film? And I hadn't heard anything about the film. I hadn't, I didn't know there was a film being made about the USF Forest Preserve. And so I looked at the trailer you sent me, and it looks like something that, you know, is, and the interview you're going to use is an interview we did on this show with one of the biology graduate students. And so there will be some footage in this film. So I guess that's a full disclosure, although there's no money being exchanged, of course. But many of our listeners will have heard about the USF Forest Preserve, why students are leaving efforts to save it, and there are stories and interviews on WMNF.org. But give us a little bit of background, Luke, about the preserve and why it's important.
Well, my first experience with the preserve, I guess to go all the way back, I came to the program in the fine art department to do my master's, and on my call interview, my work is the visual art that I've done has always been environmentally based. And so I asked, you know, what kind of resources are there at the school, you know, if I were to choose USF. And Noelle Mason was she's the head of the sculpture department. She was on the phone with me and she said, you know, there's this great preserve that USF has access to, or that, you know, students can use, that's just up the street. So when I got here, I went to the land like pretty immediately. And, you know, fell in love with the property and have spent a good amount of time there. And so, yeah, when I heard that it was, you know, slated for development, I felt like I wanted to be able to do whatever I could do, you know, with the talents that I've gotten through school and et cetera to, yeah, contribute to that cause.
What types of arts were inspired by what you saw at the preserve?
Well, for me, I've worked in a lot of different mediums, mostly like sculptural, and then in the last few years, I picked up a camera and started making film and some like experimental short stuff. I really like that how portable that is and how easy it is to get that kind of work out. There's been some experimental film, I guess, that's been based in not just the preserve, but the animals that also can be found, or the non-human others that can be found on the campus as well.
Yeah. And just to remind people, this is Luke Myers. He's a student at USF. He's made a new documentary film called Choke Point about the USF Forest Preserve and students who are leading the efforts to save it. This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. My name is Sean Canaan, and some activists at USF are calling on the university to put a conservation easement on the property. Are you familiar with that effort, what a conservation easement would do?
Yeah, so the goal there is basically to not only guarantee that the land cannot be developed, but also to create a partnership with Florida conservation organizations that would better manage the land and give, you know, USF more resources to do the kind of management that needs to be done out there.
You documented the trip of some students and others through the preserve to spread the word about how important it is. You were on this trip through the preserve with them.
Right.
Describe where you started, what kinds of habitats you went through, and what it was like.
So I went with Jeannie Munger, who is sort of the lead person in this little coalition that has been building, and Steven Hesterberg and Christian Brown, and all three of them are doctoral candidates in the integrative biology department at USF. And so the four of us started at USF Riverfront Park, you know, where you can rent a kayak or do like a ropes course. There's a disc golf park there too,
if you're affiliated with the university.
Exactly, yeah. We started there and we went to the river, and we walked up the river until we hit where the creek flows in. That's the drainage for the preserve land. And then we followed that creek upstream all the way to Brooksby Downs, which is where, on the other side of Brooksby Downs from there, it turns into the Cypress Creek, like, wetlands area. And the goal of doing that was to sort of put ourselves in the footsteps of the wildlife that uses this corridor, because this little, like, really just sliver of land connects from Cypress Creek going north from there. You know, you go all the way up into the Wild Coast. But then on this side, if you go up the Hillsborough River, it goes to the Lower Hillsborough Preserve and then eventually into the Green Swamp. And so an animal going from one place to the other, if they're avoiding development, they're going through this preserve. And so cutting off this, you know, this space through development would basically sever that last little link. So we wanted to just experience, you know, that same sort of, and it certainly, you can look on the satellite map and see where the, you know, development has already encroached off of, like, Amberley Drive, off of Brooksby Downs, and then on the Brooksby Downs side of it too, and north of the golf course. But starting, you know, at the river and walking through this, like, wilderness that basically, you know, hardly anyone has been through. There's signs, there's like the balloons that you always find in the woods, you know, but you're basically totally remote. And then to get to that point where it gets so narrow and to see the, you know, the apartment buildings on both sides of you, and there's all of a sudden there's like, there's not just like one animal track or, you know, one sign, but it's like a highway for animals in this one spot. These really well-worn paths and like dozens and dozens of tracks of all kinds of different species. We saw, while we were walking, we saw deer tracks, otter tracks, gator tracks, bobcat tracks, even coyote tracks, all in the same, like, literally like 4 to 6 foot wide path that they were all sharing. So,
and I'm assuming that that might be where you get the title of your documentary, Choke Point. It sounds like this narrow path is all that stands in the way of perhaps development just blocking out any kind of pathway for these animals to go through.
Yeah, you know, and thinking of the title, I was researching the history of that terminology, and it's typically used in warfare, but also specifically naval warfare. So it's like waterways that have a narrow access point that can be defended or attacked is like what, you know, the original word was for. But I think that it also represents, you know, the sort of visceral reaction that I think a lot of us get when we think of this land being developed.
Our guest is Luke Myers, a student at USF and a filmmaker. His documentary is called Choke Point. It's about the USF Forest Preserve, their efforts of USF students mostly, and some faculty, of course, and community, leading efforts to save it, because USF recently put out a request for proposals, or at least a request for ideas for proposals. And of course, USF told me that they didn't have to pick any of these. They could just ignore them all and go on with life. But it certainly raised fears in the community that there might be development north of Fletcher Avenue, just north of the USF Tampa campus, in between the Hillsborough River on the east side and the golf course, including the golf course on the west side. And so that's what your documentary film is about. It's about this journey that you took through this preserve, through the choke point that of this narrow corridor where these animals travel. About how long was the journey from the Hillsborough River up the creek and to Brooksby Downs?
We logged our track on a GPS at like 5.6 miles. But because of the, you know, how much swamp we were going through and stuff, I think we started the day around 8 a.m. and finished around 7 p.m. So it was a full day out there to go through, yeah.
So even though as the crow flies, it might not be a very long distance, it's such, it's so remote and wild that it took you, you know, that's a pace of like, what, a half a mile an hour, roughly.
Right, yeah.
So if people want to see your documentary film, where can they see it?
Well, as of this morning, the premiere we're really excited about is actually sold out. So we're at capacity at New World Brewing. But if you can't see it there, it will be on YouTube later. And I'll send a link to the show so that you can post that.
Yeah, we'll post that up on our website. And the documentary's trailer is online right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play that right now and so that people can just hear a few seconds of this documentary. So here is the documentary for the film Choke Point by our guest, Luke Myers.
We want to highlight just how fragile this space is and how narrow this corridor is and how important it is too for Tampa Bay and for the state of Florida.
That's the trailer, that is, for the documentary film Choke Point. And I should tell people, the voice that you heard is Jeannie Munger. Luke mentioned her earlier. She's been a guest on WMNF before. You can look that up online. One of the most stunning visuals for me watching that trailer is at the very end, you show a little bubbling spring, a freshwater spring. I assume it's freshwater, but it's just beautiful, clear water coming out of a sandy mud. So there are springs in this area, natural springs that provide fresh water, could potentially provide fresh water to the Hillsborough River ecosystem.
I'm actually not sure about that. That footage was not shot on the preserve land. That was in one of the other springs north of here. But I just used it because it's representative of the beautiful, clear, sandy water that does flow through the preserve.
So yeah. That's what some of the water is, that clear?
Mm-hmm,
maybe
absolutely.
With some has tannins, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, when we walked through it, the water was super clear. I don't know. We're planning to go back in August when the water's a lot higher and see what the difference is there. But the acreage that it flows through does a really amazing job of filtering everything out. And that's like, you know, this is one of the reasons that really everybody, and this is something that Jeannie has talked a lot about too, but everybody in Tampa should be concerned about this development because it directly affects the water quality of the Hillsborough River.
Our guest is Luke Myers, and he's created a documentary film called Choke Point. It's going to be premiering tomorrow night. He mentioned that it's sold out at the New World Brewery. He's a student at USF and a filmmaker about the USF Forest Preserve. This is WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. It's 12:38 in the afternoon. I'm going to give out the phone number in case people have questions about the film or about the preserve. You know, if you haven't been in it, maybe Luke could give you some insights about what you would see there if you would be allowed in. But I think even for people who aren't allowed to go into this preserve, it's still maybe important for them to feel that it's preserved. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You could also send your emails to dj@wmnf.org. You can send a text message to 813-433-0885. So that's 813-433-0885. If you do send a text message, can you please sign your name? So Dave in Gulfport texts us and says, have any successful alumni been contacted for possible donations to put toward purchasing it as a conservation area? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe you do, Luke. And also, what are some of the other ways that people are getting involved to try to save this land?
Yeah. Right now, the land is not for sale. So the path forward for conservation is really convincing USF that they need to partner with a conservation organization to protect the land. The state, you know, that who USF is a part of is technically the landholder. And there's no reason, as far as I'm concerned, really, why they shouldn't continue to be the landholder. USF wants to leverage the land for a ground lease, and they say that they could, you know, provide like money for student scholarships, et cetera, with the lease proceeds. But that's really not. It's a really short-sighted way of selling the property, or their way of selling their development plans, because it's the quality of education that is currently offered in the biology department, archaeology department. Several departments use the land, you know, would be directly impacted by it being developed. So, you know, it's hard to say. But specifically to your question, I don't believe any alumni have directly been contacted. I do know that there are several people that are interested in, I mean, Hillsborough County Board of Commissioners has expressed interest in acquiring the land as, you know, maybe as a last resort if they need to, you know, just to make sure that it stays conserved.
The request for ideas or proposals, the deadline for that was a couple of weeks ago. And so now we have an idea of some of the proposals that have been put forward by private companies. Presumably they're saying, hey, we'll lease this land from you and this is what we'll do with that land. What do those projects look like, the ones that USF now has a choice to pick from or to reject?
Well, I mean, the immediate take for me, and I think a lot of people that reading the document is scary, is what they look like. And I want to just mention, maybe you can put a link to this somewhere later, but that document is publicly available, so anybody can download and read this PDF. But the proposals range from, like, there's a firm from, I think, Boston or the New England area that doesn't really know much about the area, and their proposal is sort of, hey, here's our company, here's what we do, we'd love to work further with you on this. To much more specific, there's a proposal from the Beck Group, which has Tampa offices, but also, very interestingly, has a lot of offices in Texas, where President Kural came from. And
USF president.
Yeah, yeah. And their proposal sticks out to those of us that have been reading it closely, because unlike the others, they don't provide references or past projects or anything. It's almost like it was written as if they assumed they were getting the contract. And their proposal includes possibly a football stadium, lots of retail, mixed housing, mixed income housing. And then they also recommend relocating Mosi to this property, which is like something that, as far as I know, nobody has asked for. So it's sort of we're like, where are they getting this stuff from? But
is this the same proposal as the one that has green roofs on some of the buildings to kind of, I guess give it a little bit of greenwashing to it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if you didn't know any better reading this proposal, you'd be like, well, this sounds great. Why wouldn't we do that? But it's what's not written in that proposal is that any development of the area, you know, stops the controlled burns or the fire management that's been done on the property and that needs to continue happening on the property in order for it to stay this rare ecosystem that it is. If it doesn't get burned, then the ecosystem converts. And so putting literally any buildings on this property stops that from happening. So there's no real way of protecting this land that involves building a bunch of buildings on it and moving, you know, a few thousand people in there.
And from my previous conversations with Jeannie Munger, the integrative biology PhD candidate, PhD, I don't know her exact title right off the top of my head, but from the student that I've talked to, Jeannie Munger, has said that the south part of this property is a smaller area that's uplands. And that's really the only place you could actually even build on, because the rest of the property, the vast majority of it, is wetlands that would be completely undevelopable. But putting all of the buildings on for the development on this uplands part would completely destroy this very ecologically valuable part, this uplands part of the preserve. And so you would, if you develop there at all, you're losing it. And as you mentioned, even if you put a small footprint there, there's other repercussions. Mm-hmm. If someone looked at a map of where the development is proposed versus the entire size of the ecosystem, they might think, oh, well, it's only on a third or a quarter of the whole preserve, so maybe it's not going to be that harmful. I don't really have a question there. I guess I wanted to point that out. But let me read this question that came in from, we have a phone call. We might as well go to the air. If you have a question or comment, you can call us at 813-239-9663. This is Pat in Tampa. Hi, Pat. What's on your mind?
Hi. This is Pat Kemp. I'm chair of the County Commission and frequent listener and supporter of MNF. So I was listening, and thank you for all the activism that you're doing. As you noted, we at the County Commission wrote a letter with regards to this, but it is, I've looked through this map and have been following this, and I think it's important, and I've just been in and out of the necessarily in and out of listening. But I think it's important for people to understand that this is now owned by the state of Florida. When USF owns it, it's owned by the state of Florida. And the state of this would no way be happening if it wasn't like okay with the governor to sell off these, special places. This, as you noted, a lot of it wetland, a little bit of it upland development area, the golf course area, of course, but then the other 100 acres that are there just north on Fletcher Avenue. And I was also very interested. I've been working very hard to protect the Science Museum, which the fact that some plan mentioned, oh, well, we'll just move the Science Museum there. And it's like, oh, really? Like, are you going to pay to move it there? And are you going to build a new Science Museum on you? You know, like, we don't have money to do that. It's a county-owned museum. And so it's just very suspect, the whole thing. And, we wrote in saying we certainly want the state, USF, to keep this property in preserve. And we noted, secondly, that, you know, if that somehow weren't going to happen, that perhaps we could look at some kind of joint ownership somehow or protection, at least of the pristine places of that. The most of the property is, whether uplands or wetlands, never been touched. Of course, we have about 100 acres there of the golf course that has been developed.
Commissioner Kemp, before I turn your question over to Luke, I want to ask you, is there any sort of process that if USF does decide to go with one of these proposals, is there anything that the county commission, is there any step that the county commission could take at that point? Do they have to get any kind of zoning changes or any other permission to move forward?
Well, as I believe that all of the property being discussed is under the jurisdiction, I could be wrong about this, but I think I'm right, of the city of Tampa. So the city of Tampa would be the place, I believe, that the zoning decisions and, all of that would be made.
Well, I appreciate you calling into the show. Thanks so much, former talk show host at WMNF as well, Commissioner Pat Kemp, Hillsborough County Commission.
But I appreciate all the information he's giving and all the work that they're doing. And it shouldn't, the burden to protect this land shouldn't fall, excused by the state and fall to the county once again when the voters voted for Amendment 1 to protect land throughout Florida, and very little of that has been extended. And this could be an opportunity if that were to be seen to, give the university some resources and use that funding.
Well, thanks so much for that call, Commissioner Pat Kemp. And Luke, do you have anything to add to that, or should we just go on? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. We definitely appreciate the Board of Commissioners' support as well. I thought you were going to say that it shouldn't fall to the students to protect the land, and I was ready to reply to that. And I think, I think that it's interesting that as an institution of learning, like USF is set up to attract students who want to be like agitators and, do this kind of work. That's the position that they put themselves in, by inviting us to come do graduate work at the school. So then I like how it sort of sometimes comes back on them that we hold them accountable for the stuff that they say they want to do.
Our guest is Luke Myers, a student at USF and a filmmaker. His documentary is called Choke Point, and it's about the USF Forest Preserve and why students are leading efforts to save it. And this is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 12:50 in the afternoon. If you'd like to call in, you can dial 813-239-9663. You can also text us at 813-433-0885 or email dj@wmnf.org. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Let's take another call. We have Josh in Winter Haven. What would you like to say, Josh?
Yeah, I just want to say, I worked at USF before, actually in the herbarium, and I actually did meet the lady who did the botanical survey there, and it's a small piece of land, And it's like, but there should be a huge fuss made about this because the land is small, but it's actually really pristine. You know, the uplands have been, they still have a lot of native diversity in them. But the whole area has so many varied ecosystems that are all pretty well intact, especially considering its like location, but not even just its location. It's a small piece of property that, I mean, you can't really put a value on it, especially with so much that we've lost in Florida. Like, this isn't just a random piece of property that people want to save. The people who know about it know its value, and it's a shame because if we lose it, you know, no one else is going to know in the future. So, I mean, that's really all I have to say. And I think it would be a shame if USF did this, but it wouldn't surprise me because when I worked there, my department was extremely underfunded. So, I don't know. I hope they don't do it. And, I mean, that's really all I can say. If you haven't been out there, please go out there. You know, it's a great place. It's very small, but, I mean, that's all I can say.
Thanks for your call, Josh. Thanks. And Luke?
Yeah, I think that you're right. The people that know about it know its worth, and there is definitely no dollar amount that can be put on it. I think something that we haven't mentioned yet, I know you talked to Jeannie about this, is the anthropological value of the site also and the cultural significance to, local tribes. And that's, I mean, there is so much documentation of civilization on this land, going back 13, 15,000 years even. And this, I don't understand how USF can readily be the next, developer to pave over, you know, these sites. It's insane.
There's likely to be perhaps burial grounds on this site. And
yeah, there's confirmed burial grounds.
With all the news around the state and around this area and even around the country and in universally Canada now, of where they're finding these grave sites that have been developed over, and what a shame it is, and how we're trying to make amends for doing that in the past. Well, seems kind of counterintuitive to continue to do it.
Yeah, you know, this is like, there's no mention of the archaeological significance of the site in the request for information. And there's been a very disappointing radio silence from the USF archaeology department, actually, at school, or anthropology department. And the thing that really gets me is that this is just contributing further to the contemporary erasure of, you know, indigenous groups. That's like, this isn't something that we once did. This is like an ongoing issue, and this is USF's complicit in that issue.
Our guest is Luke Myers, a student at USF and a filmmaker. His documentary is called Choke Point. It's about the USF Forest Preserve and efforts for students to save it at USF. And we have some text messages coming in. If you'd like to join us on the phone, you can call 813-239-9663 in the last 7 minutes or so of the show. So Bubba writes, the Beck Group proposal sounds similar to the development around the UCF football stadium in Orlando. I don't know the specifics of that one, but maybe Luke could tell us more about that. But I do know that UCF, at least 30 or so years ago, that was out in the middle of nowhere. Now it's just completely, there's development all around UCF in the Orlando area. And now they have a football stadium out there. It used to be pristine lakes and forests. And so, so do you know anything about the similarity of the development?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not familiar with UCF, but in terms of, or in talking about the Beck Group proposal, you know, the document that contains all the proposals says in the first paragraph, despite what's listed below, USF is not interested in pursuing a football stadium, which USF has also said, we don't have to act on these proposals. And USF has also said, we're going to form a committee of students and faculty to review these proposals. And USF has also said, Steve Curiel has no idea about this document. This was early on, you know. So I wouldn't trust anything that they're writing in this. Like, the fact that two major developers spent thousands of dollars in 3D software and with their architects creating these proposals, and for USF to say, oh, well, you know, there might be football stadiums in this proposal, but we're not interested. I don't really buy that. And the Beck proposal specifically lays out a plan that shows how they would fund the stadium through developing the upland first and then through the proceeds and profits of that, you know, from people moving in and retail and those leases, it specifically lays out then taking that money to fund the football stadium. To me, it reads as though somebody at USF really wants a new football stadium. They know they can't afford it, and they're, you know, wanting to trade away the last Sandhill Habitat in Hillsborough County to get it.
All right. This is WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan, and my guest is Luke Myers, a student at USF. His new documentary film is called Choke Point. It's going to debut at New World Brewery tomorrow. That's sold out already, but we're going to put up a link to it as soon as we get the full documentary. After that, we'll put that on our website. And if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. You might be listening on wmnf.org, or you might be listening on the WMNF app or watching on Facebook Live at the WMNF news page. Well, David writes in, he says, Luke is a very impressive young man. I hope to see the film. Has he reached out to Carlton Ward regarding his work on the Florida Wildlife Corridor, or think that would be a great partnership? And David's, in my opinion, David's right. It has what you did with your film and the expedition of these students. It has a lot of reminiscence of Carlton Ward and the Florida Wildlife Corridor. Of course, they covered quite a lot of the Florida Peninsula. You're looking at this relatively small area of land just north of USF. But have you thought about any kind of partnership?
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I think right now I would describe our relationship as he's an inspiration to me, but not someone that we've worked with or spoken to yet. But certainly the Path of the Panther project would be, you know, there's no documentation of panthers using this property yet, but as that effort continues to allow them to expand into their historic territory, certainly conserving this land would be part of it. So
what about someone who said, well, heck, I live in an apartment near Bruce B. Downs. I don't want a panther in a preserve that's, you know, that's only 100 feet or 200 or whatever it is feet from me. If the panthers are coming, would it be better for them to have kind of a corridor to get to the Green Swamp or to get to the Nature Coast or something like that? I don't know if you're an expert on panthers or anything like that, but it seems to be, if they had a place to go or a corridor to travel, it would probably mean that there was less negative interaction with humans.
Yeah, I mean, the negative interactions with humans and panthers comes from when humans hit them with their cars, not from anything that the panthers are doing.
Which would happen more often if this choke point were closed.
Yeah.
Our guest is Luke Myers. His documentary is called Choke Point. So let's just talk a little bit more about the documentary in the last couple of minutes of the show. Is it a half an hour documentary? And how long is it, I guess I should ask? And what kind of scenes will you see and interviews will you see in this film?
Yeah, so there's interviews with the three biologists, Stephen, Jeannie, and Christian. The running time is 12 minutes. And it covers the hike that we did, as well as the protest that happened a couple weeks after that. And then there's just a little bit about, you know, what's happened since, including the proposals that have been, you know, announced.
So there's even news that's as recent as that makes it into your documentary film.
Yeah, you know, I'm wanting to continue to stay with this story until, you know, what some conclusion is reached. So I'm sort of seeing this as part one.
So if people can't go to the premiere tomorrow night and they don't happen to find it on our website later on when we put it up, where can people find more information about your film, Choke Point?
It will be on the Save the USF Forest Reserve website as well. So if you just, at this point, I think there's enough that if you just Google Save USF Forest Reserve, you can find info.
And I'm going to put up links to that website, their Instagram page, and so forth on WMNF.org. Well, thanks so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Luke.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in. Luke Myers is a student at USF and a filmmaker. His documentary is called Choke Point. It's about saving the USF Forest Preserve. My name is Sean Canaan. Thanks to everyone who called in, and thanks to Frank Knox and to Joe for answering our phones. Stay tuned now for Franco Silva's Latino 54 on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland.